Yeah, I don't think you could Google your name and
the Cenobite.
Actually, let's try that. On our Facebook page and in the comments, once we post this episode, post either your name and the hedgehog or your name and the Cenobite, and we'll get a kick out of the results.
Welcome to another episode of the MacGuffin Podcast, the movie review podcast that dreams are made of. Keith Foster, you are the co-host, and you live in San Diego, California.
You are Cassidy Robinson. You are now from Las Vegas, Nevada.
Yes, residing in Las Vegas, Nevada. And I finally have a desk again, getting settled in. I don't have all my movies unpacked. That's a major difference.
Okay.
They are still in the garage in boxes because I had to sacrifice one of my bookshelves before we moved. So until I have that situation figured out, my room feels a little naked without shelves and shelves of now dead media.
I get that. It also helps provide, soundproofing effect. It insulates.
Yeah. Do I sound kind of roomy right now? Do I sound a little like too...
You sound all right. You sound a little more than your old digs, but not bad.
Yeah, I don't sound like I'm recording from the inside of Gollum's cave or something.
No, I actually feel like that, you know, it's very wet. It might have some good reverb.
Okay.
I don't think that'd be like the worst place to record. I think, you know, like on the mountain with a wizard yelling in your face, like, right, that'd be worse.
The wind blowing like into the mic, all the snow caking on the outside of it wouldn't be
you're
good.
You're trying to do the countdown, and it's like 5. The movie review podcast that dreams are made of! No, my Gandalf's always yelling.
So, today we're going to be reviewing Detective Pikachu, and at the end of the podcast, we're finally going to get to our Netflix homework, which you assigned me, Logan's Run. There's some upcoming stuff we were talking about. We were trying to get down to the bottom of what we're reviewing next week.
I want this on the record that I want to review the movie that people will actually be watching this weekend, John Wick 3.
Yes.
But you're a little fucking bitch about it, and you're like, I haven't seen the first two. That has never stopped me with a Fast and Furious movie, by the way. And you mentioned The Sun is Also a Star. Mm-hmm. And then I suggested watching A Dog's Journey as a total joke. And you didn't know about A Dog's Cinematic Universe.
Right. So I thought that A Dog's Journey was the trailer that I had been seeing of the, it's like basically Homeward Bound.
No, you're thinking of A Dog's Way Home.
Right, where he, like, befriends a really poorly animated mountain lion.
So there, the first one was A Dog's Purpose. And the central premise behind this is that it is, like, the same soul in every dog that that a person has ever owned. That dog is meant to be with you. So it's like...
It's a reincarnation story.
Yeah, and they're always voiced by Josh Gad.
Mm-hmm.
Then that one, I guess, did good enough, and they're cheap enough to make because they like have no special effects. So then they made A Dog's Way Home, which that dog is voiced very poorly by Bryce Dallas Howard, and it's about a dog that like runs away. And yeah, it that one looks more like Homeward Bound, and there's like a really shitty CGI mountain lion.
So bad.
Oh, so bad.
The worst mountain lion I've ever seen. Yeah, I don't know if there's anything to judge that against.
I'm looking at a still image of it right now.
Yeah.
And the legs are out of proportion.
Mm.
And they have to do like a motion blur effect, but it's only surrounding the mountain lion. So it looks so fake.
If anybody remembers the very rudimentary CGI in the 90s Beast Wars television series, and you remember like what the cheetah and stuff looked like in that, that's what it looks like.
It kind of looks like that. Yeah. Also, the scaling of this image that I'm looking at makes it look like the mountain lion is actually smaller than the dog.
Mm-hmm.
Because apparently they're bad at perspective.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there's a dog's way home. Which is, I don't think a direct sequel, but it is definitely like the same writers. It's the same team. So that came out in fucking January, right?
I guess.
Now.
So you say.
Yeah. It came out. That movie's done. Now, I just saw a trailer before Detective Pikachu of A Dog's Journey, which is a direct sequel to A Dog's Purpose. And I only know that by looking up the IMDb of it, because Dennis Quaid's in both, Josh Gad
is in both. Yeah, that's why I was having this weird kind of deja vu when I saw that trailer, because I swore that movie had already happened.
it has, basically. So this one is about the same dog's soul, mm-hmm. but instead of it being with Dennis Quaid, it follows his granddaughter? I don't know. I don't care. But it's funny because A Dog's Way Home and A Dog's Journey sound like the same movie.
They are the same
movie. We've spent way too much time talking about these three really trashy
dog movies that we're not going to see.
Why don't we get into some Obey Consume?
Oh, yes. Let's do that.
So I'm going to throw it to you first, because you always put that shit on me.
That's so, why you grabbed the reins of the programming and introduced the segment.
I'm going to be a more assertive co-host. I'm going to stop letting the podcast pass by me passively, and I'm going to throw it in your face. Cassidy, what media have you been consuming? What shows have you been watching? What podcasts have you been listening to? What is your jam right now?
What's my jam? So now that I'm living in this house with friends of the podcast, Kate and Ashley, they have all of the programming that I didn't have access to before. They have all the apps. They have a Fire Stick. We can watch the shows. And I've been watching a few, sitting in on a couple episodes of a few shows here or there. I know that we've talked about it before on the podcast, or you did, so I don't want to like use this as my official thing, but I started watching Barry, and I'm pretty obsessed with it. I think it's fucking terrific.
Oh my god. Are you caught up?
No, I'm about episode 5, season 1, but it's like my favorite thing right now.
Okay, I almost used Barry for mine. This
I know season, that everyone's talking about season 2, that's why I started watching season 1.
This season has been so fucking good. It's like... Mm-hmm. It, like, checks the boxes that Breaking Bad used to check for me.
Right.
But it's a comedy, too, so it's mm-hmm. it's a little more digestible than sure. Breaking Bad was. But when it wants to turn up that tension...
It can do it.
And be yeah. into... Oh, yeah. My God.
And I saw... one of the main things that made me want to check it out is... saw a tweet from Guillermo del Toro... Oscar-winning director Guillermo del Toro, saying that, you know, he always appreciated Bill Hader as a comedic actor, but now he's begun to really appreciate him as a director. So I was like, damn, Gina. So I went and started that. But the show that I really wanted to talk about, though, is a Hulu show, and it's called Pen 15. Have you started watching that?
No, I've heard about it, though. I've heard good things.
It is good. It's kind of a weird experiment of a show. So it's these two comedians who I think they kind of co-wrote it. The brainchild, you know, the brain masters of the show, if you will. And it's about sort of their middle school experiences when they were 14. But they, who are obviously older than 14, they're probably in their early 30s, are playing themselves as 14-year-olds, but the rest of the cast is actual 14-year-olds.
Oh, okay. That's funny because there's this podcast called the Dead Pilots Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is pilots that have almost been signed into production but have like been officially labeled dead, or like pilots that got offered for the pilot but then didn't get picked up to series, and then they'll do like a table reading of that pilot.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, it's actually a really good podcast. But they did it. John Hodgman actually had a show that was exactly that premise. It's just that it was John Hodgman, and he would play himself at a younger age.
Right.
But everybody was, and all of his co-stars were
children,
like age appropriate. Yeah.
Right. And it's tricky business, especially when you're dealing with a show about that age and like first sexual encounters and like learning about your body and all that kind of stuff. And I think maybe that plays a lot easier with women than it does with,
well, I think, I mean, one of the things with
John female Hodgman stars is, versus male,
and I'm not saying that they like ripped him off or whatever, because parallel thought is a thing that happens a lot. I just think that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Also, so check out the Dead Pilots podcast.
The stars of the show are Maya Erskine and Anna Conkle. I think they're comedians of sorts. But it's a really funny show, really sweet, very tender, has kind of a Wonder Years, Freaks and Geeks vibe to it.
Okay.
Very like brutally honest, but also like awkwardly funny. Or maybe even like with a dash of Strangers with Candy, but never quite that absurd.
Oh, okay.
So if you're into either of those things, check out Pen 15.
I've heard good things, so that's one that's on my list.
What's yours?
I have been, oh my god, I'm so excited for this one. I've been watching I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson on Netflix. It's a sketch comedy show. There's only like 6 episodes. They're all less than 20 minutes long. So you can consume it pretty quickly. And it is just the funniest thing that I have seen in a long time. Like, I haven't laughed this hard at a TV show. It reminds me of like when we used to be in high school and we'd stay up too late and watched the UCB sketch show.
Sure.
Like it's like that. He used to be a writer on SNL. Well, he's actually a cast member he was like a featured player for a season,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't working out, and so they kept him as a writer, but no longer kept him as an actor, which he's like the first time that's really happened.
Yeah.
He has an episode on the Netflix show The Characters, which I actually don't remember. I did like that show a lot, but I don't remember his episode so much. But so he basically, this is like his sketch show. He's not in every sketch, but it's, I think most of the episodes were directed by Akiva Schaffer of Lonely Island
fame. Mm-hmm.
And it's just like a masterclass of like setting up an expectation for a sketch and then continuing forward with it to the point that you wouldn't expect. It's just so fucking funny.
And what network is this? Where, how do people find it?
Netflix. It's a Netflix original. I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson. It's just, it's right up my comedy sensibilities. So
cool.
If you wonder, like, because I mentioned that I'm a comedian, if you wonder what makes me laugh, this shit makes me laugh. It's so funny. And a lot of SNL alum will drop in and have little cameos too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that sounds cool.
It's so consumable because, like I said, it's 6 episodes. You can watch it in the length of time that you would binge like 2 normal hour long episodes of whatever.
Okay, cool. Let's go ahead and catch up with some of this movie news. We've been sort of avoiding that segment for a while, but there's some things here to talk about. The first story that we want to talk about that's gained a lot of traction on our Facebook page Follow us on Facebook if you're not already, facebook.com/MacGuffinPod, where you see all of our news stories. The Sonic director has vowed to redesign the character following online criticism. And this is pretty nuts because the movie, you know, they teased out the first big trailer and it was received so poorly on YouTube and on the internet at large that they are actually like taking the time to come up with a different character design.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is insane. I think this is like pretty unprecedented. They've filmed this movie. It's done. They have it in trailers and stuff. And the I wonder like if he just fucking tweeted this, or if he has like studio approval to do this. But he said he's going to redesign the character, which is going to make the budget for this movie skyrocket. Like you have to completely redo every. I mean, I don't know how, I don't know enough about CGI, how easy it is to just sort of plug in a new character, because all the filming's done. So I don't think they'll need to reshoot stuff, but they'll need to.
They'll have to go through every frame that this character is in.
But they won't have to actually reshoot anything. They'll just have to, like, I don't know. I don't know what involved. But either way, like, it's either that they have so much confidence in this movie that it will do well with a different fucking character design to redo all of this, at least character animation, right?
Right.
I can't think it could possibly be worth it. I mean, yeah, Sonic's a well-known property, but he's always been sort of campy and dumb. Like, nobody's ever cared. Like, is there a canon fucking Sonic story for people to follow? It, like, this is the same one that introduced the fucking weird hedgehog with the black spikes and the red highlights that shot guns just because they thought it'd be cool. Like, I just can't imagine it will possibly be worth the money that it will cost to redesign and reanimate this character and reinsert it into every fucking frame. But I guess kudos to listening to people being upset. I don't know. I think this is just, they should just probably call this movie what it is and release it and just like stop spending money on marketing. Just sort of let the chips fall where they will, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I mean, here's the thing. There's kind of a couple things about this story. So, if Sonic wasn't as ginormous of a franchise as it is, and I know like you're thinking like who gives a shit about Sonic? The truth is, a lot of people give a lot of shits about Sonic. Like it's almost kind of like, you know how like you think of like raver music or techno music as being like very, very niche, but then like all of those like DJs and stuff and all the people who go to EDC like make a ton of fucking money.
No, I understand
that is the Sonic cult that exists online. There's like entire Tumblr pages devoted to nothing but Sonic 24/7.
Have you ever done the Google game? This is a fun game that our listeners can do. You just Google your name and then the hedgehog. So your first name and then the hedgehog. Because there's so much fan art that it will come up for anybody's name. So like you would just type in Cassidy the Hedgehog.
And see what pops up.
And then this could be a fun thing. So on our Facebook page, when we post this episode, if our listeners want to Google their name and the hedgehog, just like post it in the comments. I would love that. But yeah, so I've done it. You do Google Keith the Hedgehog and then
I'm sure there's plenty of those.
Yeah, you post. So I get that there's a fan base for it.
An insane fan base. So,
but here's the thing, like, the fucking mythology of Sonic is so loose and tepid. Like, there was one with a weird dark hedgehog named Shadow who, like, mm-hmm. shot guns at people. Like
I remember that.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is there, like, a canon Sonic mythology that you have to be beholden to?
Not necessarily. But there was, I mean, there was like that animated cartoon from the 90s. They could tap into that if they wanted to. Here's the thing. Here's the rest of my part two of what I was going to say.
Those fans are going to see this movie no matter what.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. They're going to go and hate watch it if they have to. But the other thing I was going to say is they could redesign this Sonic all day. They can make it the perfect Sonic that has ever been on screen. That movie's still going to suck, I promise. Like, that is not a good trailer, and not just because the animation's bad. Like, it is yet again one of these stupid sort of Smurfs, Garfield, Tale of Two Kitties, or, you know, all of that bullshit where they just take an animated character, throw it into the real world to do a fish out of water comedy. And that's not what any of these fans want to see from these characters ever. But yet they keep going to that same well every time they try and do this stuff.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying is, like, is there any scenario where redesigning the character, like, it's not going to make it a better movie? Like, I think it's better to just chalk this up as a loss and move on.
Yeah, just Dragon Ball Evolution it.
But I will say, I will give the director credit for at least saying that. We'll see what actually happens with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's sort of unprecedented. But you know what? If they do it and they actually want this, then I'll be like, okay, they actually wanted this to be the best Sonic movie it could be. I just don't think that's, I don't know. We'll see.
Oh, it's going to be garbage, I promise. Okay, this story. Spyglass Media Group has announced their first project since launching back in March and will fast-track a reimagination of Clive Barker's 1987 horror classic Hellraiser with David S. Goyer producing and writing.
You had me, and then you were lost me.
And where did we lose you, Keith?
At the name David S. Goyer.
Yep, there it is.
I think that Hellraiser is one of those properties that is ripe for a remake.
Yeah, it's been
because
it's been forever. Since the original came out, it still holds good regard, even though they've had a gazillion sequels that mostly nobody's seen.
But the problem is it has
a cult
movies.
Of its own as well. Not as crazy as the Sonic cult, but it's out there.
Sure. I don't think you could Google your name and
the Cenobite.
Actually, let's try that. On our Facebook page in the comments, once we post this episode, post either your name and the hedgehog or your name and the Cenobite, and we'll get a kick out of the results. I think that this making a remake of Hellraiser makes so much sense. They've spent the last 20 years just sort of shitting out sequels that have, you know, do well enough in the horror circuits that they keep making them. That I think, we're seeing a lot of these horror movies come around with sort of actual money being put into them. They're making that Chucky sequel.
Yeah, it's coming out soon, actually.
Yeah, with Mark Hamill. So, like, I think this property makes so much sense. David Goyer has a couple okay credits under his name, but I usually attribute that to whoever's co-writing with him.
Or directing, yeah.
Yeah, he just is sort of like, he just writes sort of like the safest movie scripts.
He's the Akiva Goldsman of genre films.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
he's kind of a hack. You can tell he's sort of learned how to write scripts from books that teach you how to write scripts.
Yeah, they're
it's always like tab A and a slot B type of storytelling.
Exactly. They're sort of too perfect as far as like formula goes. I'm not expecting anything exciting from him.
No. Not whatsoever.
I'm kind of thinking this will be like one of those movies that you'll go into and you'll be like, oh, yeah, you know, if they can get a good enough director behind it, it'll be like you go into it and you're like, ah, yeah, it was really cool up until the third act. And then it was like, what? Okay. But I think it'll do well enough.
Yeah, it could. I mean, it depends on it's the type of property that is going to depend on the marketing. It's going to depend on what time of the year they put it out, what it's up against. It's not a guarantee that it's going to be a success no matter what they do. So
yeah,
they should take special care of this. This could just be another, you know, horror remake that comes and goes. I think it should be more than that, because I think that the world that Clive Barker created in his short story that eventually he turned into his first film is really interesting and cool, and it has a lot of idiosyncrasies, and it's unlike other versions of the afterlife and hell and earth that we've seen before. Has lots of strange rules. The
mythology is so dense that you can definitely get something out of it. Yeah, yeah. I think this would be in better hands of someone like fucking Ari Aster or something. Like,
yeah, or Guillermo del Toro, or you know, something like that. Somebody who has an eye for visuals.
Yeah,
and
you get Guillermo del Toro to direct, and I'm on board. But
yeah.
Yeah, barring that, I'm not expecting a lot.
Neither am I.
But I think with the right director, it could be all right. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
I mean, David S. Goyer, he's generally terrible, but he has a couple successes under his belt.
I don't even think that
the first couple Blade movies are fine.
I don't think that he's terrible. I think that he's just so vanilla. He's not bad enough to be good, but he's not good enough to be good. He's just like the safest possible choice.
Yeah,
you go with a David S. Goyer if you don't want to ruffle feathers.
I think he can slip into bad sometimes. I think you know, maybe controversial, whatever. Everything that's wrong with Batman Begins is a David S. Goyer problem.
I agree with that 100%.
And yeah, okay. So moving on. Let's see, what was the last story we wanted to do here? This is actually the most recent one that just dropped a couple days ago. The first Star Wars film to be released after The Rise of Skywalker, which is the last in the new trilogy, will be from the Game of Thrones creators. So tell me what all that means.
I don't know if you've heard a lot of the rumblings about the most recent season of Game of Thrones.
I have. I've seen the memes.
It's kind of shitting the bed. Basically, it just feels so rushed. They could have easily drawn these stories in the last two or three seasons out to 10 seasons. And I'm not saying that they should be drawing this out just to draw it out. I'm saying they should draw it out so that stuff makes some goddamn sense. This season has felt so rushed. They're trying to shove little seasons worth of material into episodes.
Right.
So you have characters contradicting themselves from the beginning of the episode. The characters are fast traveling now. They seem to be able to span the continent in ways that they weren't able to do. Because the first seasons relied so much on telling story through travel. It's just been a bummer because this has been one of the best shows on television, and to just see them pump this ending out. And now the timing of this release could not be any better or worse for fucking Benioff and Weiss. Those are the showrunners.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're the ones that have insisted, you know, we need 73 hours. Like, that's the amount of time the story takes to tell. But the fans have not been satisfied. The critics have not been satisfied. HBO is like, fucking, we would have kept the show on forever. It makes us so much money.
Mm-hmm.
George R. R. Martin is like, yeah, it's been a bummer to see him sort of jam everything into six episodes that should have taken, you know, 30 episodes, and I still haven't even finished writing in the fucking books.
Well, right. That's like the whole thing, right? Is that now they're kind of off script because they haven't been using the novels as their like Bible anymore.
And it
because shows. They're beyond the point of where the novels end, so they're kind of making up as they go now, right?
And here's the thing: so they got kind of a story outline from George R. R. Martin, so they're not totally making it up as they go. They know sort of the big beats of the story,
yeah.
Which I think is the problem, because now they're just writing to those big beats, and all the character development that they've spent 7 years crafting has just sort of been thrown out the window, because they have to get the characters to a certain place within by the end of the episode. So it's just really frustrating to watch. And it hasn't been like the worst season of television. Like, it's still not the ending of Dexter. It's still not the ending of Saint Elsewhere. It's just not the end that the fans deserved. And they just released this press release saying that they're working on Star Wars. It couldn't be more transparent.
Yeah.
That these guys were like, oh, well, fuck Game of Thrones. We have Star Wars. Like, we have to finish this up so that we can do Star Wars. And it's just like such a slap in the face. Yeah. So this.
Well, and it's also like, is there a more picky, angry fan base than the Game of Thrones? Oh, there's Star Wars. Let's tackle that now.
Well, here's the thing. I think that they're fine when they actually give a shit, because they spent. I mean, these are the same guys who've been with Game of Thrones since the beginning. So it's not like it's not like they're suddenly like, oh, we don't know how to make TV. No, it's pure laziness. It's like, well, we need to get this shit done so we can move on to the next thing. Like, we're just over Game of Thrones. But I just don't understand, like, if that's the case, why not just pass it off to new showrunners? Like, if everybody's on board for more Game of Thrones, but the showrunners, like, just say, like, hey, we'll stay on as executive producers or whatever. But you know what? We're going to promote one of the writers to head writer now and showrunner. Mm. Like, kind of fuck them. Kind of fuck them for being selfish enough to be like, oh, this is our vision of Game of Thrones. And then at the end being like, eh, we're kind of bored. We want to do Star Wars, so whatever. Here's the ending. It's gone from really character-driven to being basically just to serve exposition.
Right.
Yeah. So I kind of hope they fucking belly flop Star Wars and really regret this decision for the rest of their careers.
Wow. Okay. Not bitter at all, Keith Foster.
Gross.
I get your frustration. My frustration, since I'm not a Game of Thrones watcher, is I really don't need more Star Wars movies. I think the world, I'm going to speak for the world right now. Here's me on the soapbox. We need a break from Star Wars. I think
I thought we were supposed to get one.
Well, it's coming out in 2022, so we'll get a couple years, I guess. But I just, and here's the thing. We've had pretty much nonstop Star Wars since 1999, if you count all of the extended universe stuff and the Clone Wars series and blah, blah, blah. And given the like contentious relationships with the fans that the last two Star Wars films had, both Solo and The Last Jedi, we'll see how this final installment of that trilogy shakes all that out, and if they can win a bunch of people back, how much fan service are going to plug in to keep the fans happy, which means it's probably going to be a boring movie. But, you know, I think after that point, depending on how it goes, you know, I still don't know much about it, and I want to keep it that way until it comes out.
Endgame had a lot of fan service, but I still thought it was a really good movie.
Sure. But depending on how all of that goes, I think after that point, you know, good or bad, we don't need Star Wars for like 20 years. Like, I'm serious. Like, let's pump the brakes on Star Wars. At this point, we're just being force-fed Star Wars. Star Wars stories we didn't want. And
I agree with you that we need a break. I don't need to start to jump into a new trilogy.
No.
That being said, The Mandalorian looks dope.
What's that?
It's going to be one of Disney Plus's flagship original series. It's it's called The Mandalorian. So you know Boba Fett. He was part of these bounty hunting culture called the Mandalorians.
Okay.
And this is about a different Mandalorian played by Pedro Pascal. And it sounds like it's going to be kind of going to have kind of a lone wolf and cub vibe to it, but in space.
All right.
It's going to be directed by Jon Favreau is the showrunner. Taika Waititi has directed a couple episodes. Like, it looks fucking cool. So I think there is still room to explore this universe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that we need to do it by launching off another fucking trilogy right away by the guys who fucking stank up the ending of Game of Thrones.
All right. And we'll leave the movie news there and move on now to the reviews of the week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about Detective Pikachu, movie that I still can't believe happened.
Yeah, definitely. do you want me to set this one up, or are you going to set it up?
I can set it up. Okay, so Detective Pikachu is directed by Rob Letterman and written by Dan Hernandez, stars Justin Smith as a young orphaned boy who's, youngish. He's 20, whatever, or 18 or so, and he's running around. And he's trying to find out more about his father who's passed. And he goes into his father's detective office. And there he meets a Pikachu. And this takes place sort of within the established Pokemon world, or sort of like a dystopian Pokemon future in which Pokemon and man are now kind of living in harmony in the city, and they're no longer like being forced to battle each other. It's kind of a post, I guess if anybody watched the children's cartoon, it's sort of beyond that point. But it does sort of take place in that world where it's an understood thing that man and Pokemon exist in the same world, even though it's in live action. So Justin Smith is Justice Smith.
Yeah.
He's sort of a Pokemon skeptic, or he's just not that into it. And he sort of resents the obsession that everybody has with Pokemon, even though all of his friends and everyone says, hey, you need to find a Pokemon partner of your own, because that's the thing. And so, yeah, he runs into this Pikachu that he can understand on a human level. He can actually hear words, English words being spoken from this Pokemon, even though nobody else can, and it's voiced by Ryan Reynolds. Wears a little detective hat, and they're going to try and solve a mystery of why all of these rogue Pokemon are going crazy after they get exposed to this nerve gas, and, you know, it kind of wraps in up into a mystery of these different disappearances and a rogue Mewtwo and evil industrialists, played by Bill Nighy.
Yeah, and Chris Greer.
Yes.
Chris Greer is, I mentioned him last week in my Obey Consume. He's the lead in You're the Worst. So it's kind of fun to see him in a movie.
Yes, and is it just me, or when he has the suit and then the big aviator shades, he looks exactly like Milo Yiannopoulos?
I don't know if
that was on purpose or what, but then the British accent and everything, it was kind of weird.
I mean, he has a British accent. He's British. I think that was a just you thing.
Maybe.
I don't think that was intentional.
Probably not. But what did you think of Detective Pikachu?
I thought it was a lot of fun. To me, this is sort of, kind of what we've been talked about with Bumblebee, another one of those movies that is targeting a not quite as young audience, but that is still definitely for kids and families. I thought the Pokemon were really cute. I thought that the genre was there was enough genre aspects for me to be into it. The plot twist and turned enough. It was a little predictable, and
yeah,
and I think the third act, kind of falls into the third act, we have to have a big action sequence problem.
Sure.
But yeah, I think that overall, this movie could have been great had they just had Danny DeVito do the fucking voice.
Okay, for reasons of not spoiling the movie, I think there's an obvious reason why that could not be. But
I disagree, and that actually made me want it even more.
Okay.
But I'll hear you out. Sure. I Ryan Reynolds was good. Like, he was, you know, he was his charming Ryan Reynolds self.
Quippy. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know,
you kind of get the idea humor. That, you know, this movie kind of reminded me of in structure and style. It reminded me a little bit. I mean, obviously, it reminded me of like Who Framed Roger Rabbit, because that's a very similar kind of idea. It also sort of reminded me a lot of a lesser known film from my youth, Mother Goose's Rockin' Rhymes.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I actually think maybe that's more applicable.
Because you have the main character who's like, I'm sick of all this Pokemon bullshit.
I think that this movie, you compare it to Roger Rabbit, and yeah. I think that's sort of the obvious comparison.
Yeah, well, that's the one that most people are going to make. The other movie that I was going to say it reminded me of, and especially in regards to Ryan Reynolds' voiceover performance, reminded me a little bit of Look Who's Talking, because I kind of got the idea that like all of his stuff was probably improv, and
it felt a little ad-libbed, because sometimes he wouldn't react to exactly what he was saying.
And there's also a lot of voiceover that's happening where the character's off screen or he's faced the other direction, so they don't actually have to animate the mouth. So a lot of that could be loose.
Yeah, and I think all of that is to the movie's benefit, because Ryan Reynolds is charming and funny and can kind of punch himself up in ways that that writers probably aren't going to be as effective.
Right.
So I think that Ryan Reynolds brings a lot to this movie, because again, comparing it to Who Framed Roger Rabbit, like Who Framed Roger Rabbit is a firm noir detective thriller, and this is more of a Pokemon movie with noir aspects,
right? And this is based on a video game property, and
loosely, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously the Pokemon, but I don't think it's really beholden to the story of Detective Pikachu's game, because I don't think there is a story. I think it's just like, I'm Pikachu and I solve crimes.
Right.
I could be wrong. But either way, I think that there's so many colorful creatures in Pokemon that they have a lot of fun with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I am not like a Pokemon super fan. I know some stuff. To me, it was like enough where I'm like, oh, that's really cute. But I didn't feel alienated. I don't know. I think there's a lot for kids in this. In a way that's still pretty entertaining.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so I think this is a perfectly acceptable movie. I think that there's, you know, nothing necessarily wrong about it, but it affected me none. And I saw it over the weekend, I think on Saturday. And it feels like I saw it Saturday this time last year. And I don't know exactly why, but I feel like the movie just evaporated off of me as soon as I walked out of the theater. And I don't know, maybe it's because I'm not quite the target demographic for this, even though, you know, I grew up with Pokemon and even kind of went through a little, you know, middle school Pokemon phase or whatever, was playing the games and all that. So I knew what most of the characters were, and I understood the basic rules of the reality, the world building that they set up. Maybe for me, the plot is a little too rudimentary, even for a family film, where I feel like if it wasn't Ryan Reynolds vamping throughout the whole movie with his voice performance, you would really have nothing here. And that isn't to just,
yeah.
Before he enters the picture, before when we're just introduced to, you know, our main actors and stuff, I was even kind of like, ooh, this feels a little bit like a Disney original, like a Xenon Girl of the 21st Century type of thing.
I get that.
And then
there's a lot of Xenon fans out there.
There are. So for some people, that is a sell. But what I mean is it didn't feel like a go see at the mall theater kind of quality film. It kind of felt, even though the special effects are fine and, you know, it's made with a decent budget, but I just kind of felt like it wasn't the type of storytelling that was happening wasn't sophisticated enough for even what it was going for. Until Ryan Reynolds comes in and literally is punching up the film as it goes. And I felt that Bill Murray used to talk about how he would get these screenplays for all these comedies he was in, and he would look at them as like, you know, sort of a rough draft whenever he saw them. He was like, yeah, I could probably do something with this. And then he pretty much just did whatever he wanted on most of the movies he was in because the screenplays weren't up to his standards. So, you know, he would take the loose outline of what his character was supposed to be and then just kind of have fun with it. And, you know, basically whatever director was working on the movie just had to kind of Bill Murray gave them. And I think that to some
he also gave us Garfield, which if we're talking about
Tale of Two Kitties
with if we're talking about kids movies with CGI animals,
it is better than that.
I'm going to say this is definitely a step above that. No, I agree with you that there's nothing game-changing about this movie, but I don't think it needs to be. I think I think you get enough fun Pokemon action.
Yeah.
And it's not a bad story. Like, you know, typically when it's just sort of a video game vehicle or a character video, it's like we're hoping that you're just excited enough about whatever you're seeing on screen that you don't give a fuck about the story.
Yeah.
And I think there's like, it's at least a serviceable story. Like it's not breakthrough or anything, but there's enough going on and there's enough character and there to keep me caring, you know, about whether or not they win or lose. I will say, I think, I'm not a huge Justice Smith fan.
Well,
I think he's.
What was he in before this? Like, are you familiar with him prior to this movie?
He was in Jurassic World, the last one.
Oh, I did not see that one. Yeah, and I guess he was in Paper Towns. He's in The Get Down. So he's a guy.
Yeah, we tried to watch it on HBO, and we stopped halfway through. It's so bad.
Right.
It's like not even fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's bad necessarily. I just think he's really bland. He's just, he doesn't bring anything.
Yeah. And I know that it's, this might be a tall order or sort of unfair or whatever, but I feel like even if you had somebody like a Tom Holland in that part, brings a little bit more charisma to even a straight man sort of performance.
I mean, if we're going to compare it to Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah.
Like, which is not fair at all because Bob Hoskins is brilliant in that movie.
There was an Oscar campaign for him during that year.
He fucking should have at least been nominated.
Yeah.
He's so good. But also a big part of that is he's playing the genre tropes to a T. Like,
right.
He's playing that hard, grizzled detective. And, you know, in this, you know, Justice Smith doesn't have that interesting of a character. He's just sort of a
kid.
Guy.
Yeah.
He doesn't really do anything interesting. I actually think that the girl is a more interesting character, the reporter.
Yes, I agree.
And I'm getting some kind of
Catherine Newton.
And I get kind of young Mary Elizabeth Winstead vibes from her.
Sure.
I really liked her, and I liked her character throughout. I think that. I like her Psyduck a lot. I think that she brings a lot to that role more than just sort of girl sidekick.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's worth mentioning.
Yeah.
Other than that, you know, you just like, I think maybe if we had had a more interesting lead, perhaps we could have gotten maybe a little more juice out of it. We could have seen maybe a little more chemistry between Pikachu and the main character. Because that's one of the things that, if you again, comparing it to Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah.
The chemistry between Bob Hoskins, grizzled detective, and the silliest cartoon that exists, Roger Rabbit.
Yeah.
You know, it's just this beautiful voice of reason, absurd chemistry going on that we don't quite get in this. And maybe it's because Ryan Reynolds sort of takes over the show.
Well, and I think people might think of Who Framed Roger Rabbit as being largely a technical achievement because it was the first time that animation and live action were mixed that thoroughly and that realistically.
I mean, it definitely is. Yeah.
And it is that too, but I think people overlook the cleverness of that screenplay and how well thought out that world building was.
It's Chinatown, but with fucking cartoons.
Right, exactly.
But they play the genre so honestly and truthfully. And here, they do a little. Like, you mm-hmm. have sort of the noir twists and stuff that you would expect. But it doesn't live in that world like Roger Rabbit.
Right. And also, Roger Rabbit is kind of a satire. This movie isn't.
Yeah. Definitely.
And so there's that kind of level. That's what I mean, sort of these levels of sophistication. And I don't mean that in the sense that I want this to be, you know, a super serious Oscar-contending film or anything like that. But I think just a little bit more cleverness in the screen on a screenplay level would have put this on a different level.
I agree. You're right. It's like, what we got was good, but it could have been really good.
Right.
Like, the premise is so out there. Like you mm-hmm. said, the fact that this movie even got made, if they had just sort of, like, already just its existence is sort of pushing the envelope a little bit.
Yeah.
If they had done that with the script in interesting ways, it would have gone from being like, yeah, that was a good family movie, to, holy fuck, did you see Detective Pikachu?
Right. Exactly. So I'm giving it it's like a B- for me, but I do think that people 12 and younger, especially, and you know, anime geeks or whatever, are going to get what they wanted out of this movie, and it's not bad by any means. It's fine.
Oh, and there's some really fun Pokemon action. I think the problem is they play more with the world of Pokemon than they do with the genre.
Than they do with the world of film. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think if they had managed to do that on both levels, it could have really elevated it. I give this movie a B. I think it's solid. It's a solid family flick. It's funny enough. It was funny and charming enough to keep me interested, and the Pokemon action's good enough that I was with it the whole way through. But I agree, it's not gonna like stick to you.
No. I mean, unless it does. There are people for whom this movie was definitely made, and they're going to, you know, this is going to be their jam. But I feel like that, beyond that specific audience and just kids in general, I don't know if it really has much of a lasting.
I think that's fine, though. I think that's, again, I kind of compare it to Bumblebee. Like, to me, this is sort of like, I mean, Bumblebee had to work harder because they were
retconning an entire.
They were playing against, you know, five, swimming up upstream, if you will, against five really bad movies.
Right.
And this could start, had the benefit of starting fresh. But I just mean that, like, I think, you know, it's appealing to kind of the same age group, mm-hmm. which is nice. You get sort of the same amount of care put into the property. I think I'm going to go on record and say this is probably the best video game movie that exists.
If it is based on an actual video game, it would be in contention for that. Sure. I would have to go back and look over everything.
I mean, there is a Detective Pikachu game, so I think it counts.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I mean, this isn't no, Assassin's Creed starring Michael Fassbender.
That movie did happen. Okay. So let's go ahead and talk about our Netflix homework then. And I will let you describe what is Logan's Run 1976.
All right. So Logan's Run is set in the future, like the 23rd century or whatever. It's these people are living in a utopia. Everyone is sort of birthed to a specific job, a specific purpose. But it's an ideal society where everybody's young and healthy and just knows what they're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Once you hit the age of 30, you are either killed or recycled, I guess. Uh-huh. Once you hit the age of 30, or you have the option to go to Carousel, where Carousel is this really weird thing where you sort of float and explode. but if you don't explode, then you get to keep living.
Right.
Is the idea. If you survive Carousel, perhaps you get some more years than your 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't want Carousel and you don't want to die, then your option is to try and run. To run out of the society. They're called runners. And Logan is, he's known as a Sandman. He's sort of the police force of this utopia. His job is to track down and kill runners. One day, he's given this assignment from this main mother computer that he has to go undercover as a runner and try to find this place called Sanctuary, where supposedly there are thousands of runners who've managed to escape the Sandmen and live in Sanctuary. So his job is to go undercover as a runner and find Sanctuary and bring them to justice,
mm-hmm.
As it was. As he's on his own run, since he's undercover, his friend thinks that he's genuinely running. And through the course of events, he meets this girl that he falls in love with. In his run goes from being undercover to a genuine escape.
Yeah.
And he has to escape this.
As he finds out more and more about this sort of utopian oppressive society.
Yeah. What did you think about Logan's run?
So Logan's run is like that perfect level of dated where when you're watching it, there's just like this aura of camp on top of everything, down from the costumes to the performances. I think even if you're not taken with the sci-fi tropes, which are, you know, being done genuinely, I think that it's still sort of fun to watch with the camp glasses on, because, you know,
so
this movie's all in a soundstage for the most part. There's some outdoor stuff towards the end of the movie, but for the most part, this entire movie takes place in a soundstage. Their utopia looks like a mall, and I think that was probably intentional.
I do want to point one thing out to you.
Mm-hmm.
This movie came out only 1 year
before Star Wars.
Star Wars.
Yes, and I think like that's kind of notable. I was going to make that same note.
This movie feels like it was made in the 60s. Like, I think it feels even more dated than 1976.
Right, and that could have to do with budget. That could have to do with a lot of things. I mean, the director who made this, Michael Anderson, is a real director. He made Around the World in 80 Days. He continued making films up through the 90s. People might remember the one of the Pinocchio movies that came out in 1999. So he was a guy, stars like real actors. Michael York in the lead, who people might remember as Basil Exposition from the Austin Power movies, and Jenny Agutter,
who looks so much like fucking what's her name, Jenna Malone.
Oh, like nowadays? Yeah. And Farrah Fawcett even has a small part in this movie.
Fun little cameo.
Yeah. But yes, I did note that this came out a year before Star Wars, because I think it's notable to mention that how much of a game changer Star Wars was for science fiction. And, exactly. And especially like, when it comes to special effects and when it comes to set design.
For sure. It blew me away when I saw that this was made in 1976. I thought for sure this was the 60s. But all that being said, I don't think this is a bad movie. I think it's a little overly long.
Yeah.
And because of that dated 70s feeling, like I was kind of getting some original Planet of the Apes vibes.
Yeah, too. I was going to say that too. I think this belongs kind of more in that era. Like if you were to draw a line in the sand, you know, with the exception
which came out a decade
before. Yeah. If But the, here's the thing that probably might blow some people's minds today who are younger and who haven't like gone back to watch like a lot of these older science fiction films is that science fiction as a genre was not taken seriously for the most part, unless you were Stanley Kubrick and you were making 2001 Space Odyssey and everyone just kind of saw that as a high scale art film, basically, because that's more or less what it was, just happened to take place in space. But, you know, Stanley Kubrick was allowed to be Stanley Kubrick. Everybody else, for the most part, it was still giant monsters and, you know, rear projection and rubber suits and bubble cars and Jetsons. And like that was science fiction. Right. Barbarella and these type of movies and the Planet of the Apes movies. And Planet of the Apes, the first couple, was like high end.
Oh, yeah. I still think the original.
I mean, they're great movies. Holds up. Yeah. I think just on the storytelling level. And there's a lot of kind of those sort of escape tropes that show up here. What I will say about Logan's Run is you see this movie and it is like a million movies come to mind and you're like, oh my God, that's where they got that.
Yeah. Like, totally.
Blade Runner. Like, there's a, I mean, there's a lot of story
fucking
stuff.
Fucking Minority Report.
Minority Report. Like, all your PK Dick stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not exactly sure when his stuff was published. I think it was maybe around this time.
I think it would have been a contemporary of whenever the, like, it's, right. It's definitely dealing with similar themes.
Yeah,
and stuff.
The kind so of sci-fi noir identity stuff. But then later, you know, you see films like In Time with Justin Timberlake that dealt with this kind of idea of like you only have so many years of life and you have to like try and gain more years. So it's sort of a bartering system. So all over the place, you see where this movie was a later huge influence on science fiction on a story level. Michael York is great in everything, even though, you know,
I actually think that that's one thing I want to say is I think the acting was really good.
These are real
his,
actors.
His friend, played by Richard Jordan, was also fucking like, I really loved his friend, and they really sell that betrayal, and I think story wise it really works. I think the thing that hangs this movie up is how dated it feels and how
the costuming and the set design. Yeah.
And just how the pacing is a little long and a little boring for what could be a really, like,
yeah,
this to me is like the epitome of a movie that's like begging for a remake.
Like, yeah.
Like, and apparently this, there actually has been one in development for a long time, supposedly with, guess who is the main character who's been attached. Guess.
I remember this. This is
you know it. You know it.
I know, but because we did this as movie news like 12,000 years ago.
It's our boy.
Oh.
Give it to Gosling.
Gosling. That's right. Yeah, and wasn't it going to be it was going to be Nicholas Winding Refn.
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
Which I don't know. I don't know. But I think like if you get the right director attached, if you get a Denis Villeneuve,
yeah,
if you get a Nicholas Winding Refn, like this could be a really exciting movie to remake. But anyway, I think all the actors, the fucking old guy,
he was great.
Peter Ustinov, and apparently most of that was improvised.
Okay,
it's so. They meet someone who's over the age of 30. He's an old man.
Yeah. Kind of lives in the ruins of DC, which again, I think super intentional.
Yeah.
Because this would be right after Watergate and.
Oh, fuck. Yeah. You're right. And you definitely get some, I think feel some influence of that with a fucking Battlefield Earth and stuff. And some of the more campy sci-fi fare.
Right.
So Peter Ustinov, he plays the first old person that they meet, and he just sort of rants about cats for 20 minutes, and I was here for all of
it. Yeah, he's a real actor. You know, he comes from kind of old Hollywood. He was in, speaking of Kubrick, he was in Spartacus. People might remember him from that. And he just gets to kind of command the screen, and he's doing it with what seems like much less effort than everybody else in the movie, but with more gravitas.
Oh my God, his fucking story about the cat names.
Yeah.
I was I was equal parts dying because it was really funny.
Yeah.
It's a really funny performance, but it's also kind of supposed to be. But it's also just completely engaging.
Right.
I was just like, that because I was getting that thing where you kind of start to get, you know, a little bored with the sci-fi-ness.
Yeah.
And then the crazy robot showed up and I was like, ooh. And then
in the ice world. Like, yeah.
Yeah. And he like pulls out those fucking guns. Yeah. And I was like, what the fuck? And then, you know, they're sort of wandering around outside for a while and I start to, you know, kind of doze off. And then Peter Ustinov comes on screen and I'm like, oh, holy shit, this movie still has stuff to do.
Right.
Cool. Like, and I sort of got back into it. Mm-hmm. I will say there's also a lot more nudity than I was expecting.
Yeah.
A lot of 70s nude.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, something fun to look forward to.
Yeah.
And Carousel is weird as shit.
It sure is.
People just sort of float and explode.
Yeah. So I what I'll say about those movies, I think if you're under a certain age and you are not super well versed in science fiction pre-Star Wars, you might have a hard time looking past the era that is evident in every single frame, and it might be difficult to connect to the movie. But I think if you can look past that and just connect to it on a story level, I think it actually holds up pretty well.
There's definitely stuff like worth it. I think if you're into hard sci-fi and you like other movies of this time period, which I do, and you just happen to not have come across this one, I think it's worth your time.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's,
yeah, especially if you like that genre of like the hunter is now the hunted, which has been a sci-fi trope forever and ever and ever. Everything from Minority Report to Total Recall, everything. This movie is kind of like the grandfather of all that. Even Brazil uses some of these ideas.
Totally. Especially, I think, with some of like the character design and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally.
So I don't even know exactly what I would grade it. Probably a B or something. But I think it's definitely worth a watch on Netflix.
I would say, if I'm grading on a bit of a sci-fi nerd curve,
right,
I would probably give it like, probably like a B+.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm grading it for a modern audience, I would say that unless this is your jam, it probably hasn't aged super well, and
you're
probably going to get bored. So if that's not your thing, if you're not into exploring the world of sci-fi film history, it's probably closer to a C-.
Yeah, if you're going to have a hard time of, you know, people running around in Mylar pajamas,
or sometimes nothing at all.
And black turtlenecks. Okay, cool. So next week we are going to review for the Netflix homework the new film starring Zac Efron as Ted Bundy, extremely wicked, shockingly evil, and vile.
Yeah.
And if anybody has anything they want to comment on as far as what we've talked about on this episode or episodes previous, you can contact us at our email address, MacGuffinPod@gmail.com. Like I said before, follow us on Facebook at Facebook.com/MacGuffinPod. Follow us on Twitter @MacGuffinPod. Follow us on Instagram @MacGuffinPod. You can stream the show and listen to it. If you happen to be, you know, streaming this on the MacGuffin's webpage, you can also subscribe to us on Player.fm, Pocket Cast, and iTunes and Stitcher Radio. If you're on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or Player.fm, please leave us a star rating and a one-sentence review. It helps people be able to find the show. We got
five
a few.
5 stars, please.
Yeah.
5 stars.
I mean, preferably, yes. And if you want to follow me individually on Twitter, you can @VCCassidy. You can also read my writing that I do every week for the Idaho State Journal, the reviews that I write there, at the Idaho State Journal's website, idahostatejournal.com, at the Arts and Entertainment tab. You can also read the stuff that I've done for the Seattle-based webpage, The MacGuffin, at mcguff.in/author/Cassidy. While you're there, be sure to check out the other articles and the other reviews written by the MacGuffin staff. Keith, what is your stuff?
You can follow me at Keith Foster Kid on Twitter and Instagram, and check out my website, www.keithfosterkid.com, where I keep it updated with upcoming show dates. So come see me perform.
See Keith live. And if you are just a listener and you've never actually seen us in person before and you are there, you know, be sure to let Keith know that you are a MacGuffin fan. When he's in the middle of one of his monologues on stage or in the middle of a joke, doesn't even matter. Just stand up and say, "I am a MacGuffin fan," and he will not consider it a heckle.
Fuck it. If somebody did that, I mean, something interesting will happen. I don't know what, but I'm not going to say don't do it.
Okay, and be sure to check out our other friends who do the podcasts of their own, including Patrick and Dennis over at Almost Educational, Bill and Brian over at the Great Albums podcast, Buddy and Alice over at Those Happy Places, and Rogue Fun, a Star Wars podcast, and Mike Fallick over at Hack Thought.
I want to be the very best, like no one ever was. To catch them is my real test. To train them is my cause. I will travel across the land, searching far and wide. Teach Pokemon to understand the power that's inside.
Bye.